I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. This is All Things Considered from NPR News.
Now, we continue our series of interviews with candidates for the Democratic presidential nomination. Dr. Howard Dean, former governor of Vermont, is in Baltimore today, and today is coincidentally his 55th birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you, Robert.
Dr. Dean, first, Iraq. If you were president right now, following events there, what would you be asking your military and civilian advisors that might provide you with policy guidance?
Well, I think we already know what the problems are in Iraq. Some of us were able to figure that out, fortunately, before the Congress voted to give the president permission to go to war in Iraq. And what we know is that now that we're there, we can't leave, that there are likely to be more al-Qaeda in Iraq today than there ever were when Saddam Hussein was in power, that Iraq was not a danger to the United States before, and the president has admitted that they had nothing to do with 9/11. And we also know that if we leave Iraq today, that al-Qaeda may well establish a foothold, or there may be a Shia fundamentalist regime that is allied with Iran. So that to pull out leaves a national security problem for the United States. So what I would do is to bring in, as George Bush's father did, over 100,000 foreign troops, preferably Arabic-speaking from Muslim nations, and then bring home all our National Guard and Reserve troops that don't belong there anyway in that kind of an engagement, and one of the two divisions that we have over there. We need to be in Iraq for the long term, but we can't do that with American troops, and we certainly can't do it under the current management of this administration.
But if I hear you right, you wouldn't be so much asking your advisors as to what to do as telling them what you think they ought to do.
Well, I've already asked them, of course. I mean, I don't arrive at these positions by making them up as we go along. I have a team of pretty good, solid advisors, and this is a conclusion that we've reached.
What if Muslim countries or Arab countries prove no more interested in sending forces to Iraq now than they did earlier this year? Would the ultimate burden reside with the U.S. to stay there until we could find other countries to share the burden with us?
Well, I think it's unlikely that that is going to happen because this president has managed to alienate the vast majority of our former allies with his both petulant behavior and his go-it-alone approach. And I believe that with a new president, we will be able to repair those damaged relations because the damage is principally based on the personality of the president of the United States, that is, the particular personal bad relations that he has created with other heads of state. And I think that can be overcome by a president who's willing to listen, willing to work constructively.
What could you do as president that, say, would convince President Mubarak of Egypt to participate in a coalition of armed forces in Iraq now, as he did under the first President Bush against Iraq, that has eluded him so far in the past year?
First of all, I would be willing, unlike the President of the United States, to stop giving contracts to places like Halliburton without proper bidding, which means that other countries and the businesses in other countries would have opportunities to be part of the reconstruction of Iraq. Secondly, I believe that an American president needs to be fully engaged in bringing peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians, where this president has not been fully engaged. And that is something I think President Mubarak would like very much.
Well, what does that mean exactly? If you were to be engaged in the Middle East peace process, say, what would you be telling your State Department to tell the Israeli and Palestinian leaders about peace and what they might have to do to get there?
Well, I think some of this is symbolism. One of the things I would do, and I've said this repeatedly, is I would ask the person who's had the most success in the last 20 years or so between the Israelis and the Palestinians to represent me and go to the Middle East and jumpstart the peace process, and that would be former President Bill Clinton. He had a tremendous gift for this. He worked well in Northern Ireland. It almost worked in the Middle East. We need President Clinton back in the Middle East as the representative of the President of the United States.
If you sent him there, would he talk to Yasser Arafat when he was there? Would he speak to him and acknowledge him as the Palestinian leader?
I think it's unlikely. I think Arafat has been correctly identified by the president as someone who is not going to have peace. His principal interest is remaining in power, regardless of how small his power base is and regardless of the cost his people pay for that. So I think direct discussions with Yasser Arafat are not likely to lead to peace.
By the way, has President Clinton expressed any interest in going back as a Middle East mediator? Have you talked to them about it at all?
I have, actually, but I'm not going to characterize the nature of those conversations. I think it would be fair to say that he would likely be willing to play a role, but I don't want to characterize anything that he said in a private conversation.
If you came to Washington as president and there were a bill like, say, the Medicare bill that's being discussed this week, considerably too much private sector participation for the likes of Senator Edward Kennedy and not nearly enough for the likes of House Ways and Means Chair Bill Thomas, is your assumption, say, if there were a Republican Congress, that that's the kind of bill you have to sign to get, do something that's better than nothing, or are you give him hell, Howard, coming here to veto
everything?
Well,
this bill is not better than nothing. Mm-hmm. And Robert, the way that we're running our campaign, we expect to at least have a Democratic House and possibly a Democratic Senate. We're bringing hundreds of thousands of new people into this campaign process that either weren't there before because they were so disillusioned, or they voted for third party. And you know, we've raised three times as much money as all the other Democrats in the last quarter. And the way we did it was to get 200,000 people to give us an average of $77. We're now trying to get 2 million people to give us $100. And we think that that's the way to beat George Bush. We can get all those $2,000 checks from corporate titans. And I think because if we can get those people successfully into the process, they're not just going to vote for a Democratic president. They're going to vote for a Democratic senator, congressman, member of the State House, member of the State Senate, and that's going to make a significant difference in the attitude towards of the Congress towards my agenda.
So you figure you're not just going to win, you figure you're going to lead a landslide that will bring Democratic control back to at least half the Congress.
I don't think we need to have a landslide to do that. All we need to do is have a few thousand votes in the marginal close districts. We're going to do what all the congressional leadership does. We're going to target 19 or 20 races that we think will be very close, and we'll have by that time, perhaps 1 million people in our network that can just funnel money to those particular seats so we can try to get them back.
Your family has been conspicuously absent from the primary campaign, I guess. Are they going to remain absent from the presidential campaign? Is it a principle with you that families don't have to do with presidential campaigns, or will we see the standard candidate shot pretty soon in the spring?
You won't see the standard candidate shot. You know, my wife is a physician. She's a very good doctor, and she loves it. There are two things in her life that she really cares about. One is being a good doctor, and, of course, the most important is her family. My daughter worked in my campaign over the summer. She may or may not choose to, you know, to get involved. My son is a senior in high school. He's not interested in getting involved, and he'd like to grow up like a normal teenager, and I think they deserve that choice. You know, nobody signed a contract that when they were born or when they married me that they were going to be loving, supporting, adoring cast. Now, my wife is going to play some roles, but that'll be her determination, not mine.
Dr. Dean, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Robert.
And happy birthday once again.
Thank you.